Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. It is good to be with you once again. Now, of course, we wasn't on last week, and I was in Boston, and glad to be back with you this week. So I'm in Dallas, yes, indeed. And we have a lot to cover today. We're going to discuss the plethora of misleading comments coming out of the Republican National Convention. We revisit voter ID in lieu of the recent decisions in favor of the voters. And, of course, much, much more. So let's get started. First up, fact-checking six claims in Paul Ryan's convention speech. Now, this was an article in CBS, on CBSNews.com, in fact, and it reads, in his rousing speech Wednesday night, vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan delivered a harsh rebuke of President Obama's tenure in the White House and pledged that a Romney-Ryan presidency would be better for Americans. But critics immediately went after Ryan for what they cast as a series of misleading statements. CBS News looked into six of Ryan's most controversial claims. Now, here's the claim that we want to talk about today. Obama is responsible for the closing of the GM plant in Janesville. Now, here's what he said in his speech. My home state voted for President Obama. When he talked about change, many people liked the sound of it, especially in Janesville, where we were about to lose a major factory. A lot of guys I went to high school with worked at the GM plant, right there at the plant, candidate Obama said. I believe if you or our government is there to support you, this plant would be here for another 100 years. That's what he said in 2008. Well, as it turned out, that plant didn't last another year. It is locked up and empty to this day. And that's how it is in so many towns today, where the recovery that was promised is nowhere in sight. Now, of course, Ryan references a speech Mr. Obama delivered at the Janesville plant in February of 2008. Now, Mr. Obama did say the following. I believe if our government is there to support you and give you the assistance you need to retool and make this transition, that this plant will be here for another 100 years. The question is not whether a clean energy economy is in our future. It is where it will thrive. I want it to thrive right here in the United States of America, right here in Wisconsin, and that's the future I'll fight for as your president. Now, some fact checkers, the article stated, have noted the plant closed before Mr. Obama took office. The plant's last full shift was on December 23rd of 2008, and the Associated Press documented the tear-filled day in very grave detail. Now, some conservative sites have noted the plant produced a limited number of vehicles up until mid-2009. But here's my problem. The statement is flat-out misleading. And yet, CBS News, along with other news organizations, did not call him out. They continue to skirt the issue by saying, a fact checker said, or a third party said, or some other entity other than the news media. Whatever happened to journalism? Whatever happened to journalists being the fact checkers? Listening audience out there, I need you to weigh in on this. I need to hear your voice on this particular issue. A, about Paul Ryan's misleading comments. B, why in the world our news media is not holding up to the standards of journalism? And in just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. But before we do that, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of TaylorMade Training and Consulting. Now, I introduce to some and present to others no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, I talk a lot about the newsroom, and I always make this statement about life imitating art. But who's to blame with this issue going on with Paul Ryan specifically, but more generally, the GOP or the Republicans, and not all of them, but a large majority of them continues to come out here misleading the American people. Who's to blame? Is it the press or the American people?
Both. Short answer is both. Long answer is, you know, I thought it was the job of the media, that's why we have them, was to keep us informed and to be able to decipher between, you know, what's factual and what's fiction. And it seems as though our media, and I'm going to, you know, stretch it here and just say probably over the last 10, 15 years has gotten lazy in the area of reporting, because it doesn't take but one person to report on something, and then everybody else is reporting on what the other person said, and then you find out later that person was not telling the truth in the beginning, and so and no one does any fact checking. They just assume that because it comes from a quote unquote credible source or a credible news organization, that it's the gospel. And what we're finding out is that that's not true at all. And I'd say over the last 10, you know, probably 15 years, our media has gotten a little lazy in some of its reporting, and it's taken this last year because, you know, truthfully, had it been on top of its game back during the whole Bush time of going to war, had they been reporting on that accurately, we may not have gone to war, because the information was always there that there was no weapons of mass destruction. So why didn't anybody report on that in such a manner that would make us take a pause? And so I think over the last so many, like I said, 15 years or so, they've just gotten lazy. And because of that, we're fed half-truths and untruths and just a lot of misinformation.
So what do you think of Paul Ryan's comments then? I mean, the fact that he had an opportunity to speak to, you know, hundreds of thousands and perhaps millions of people on an open mic in front of on a national stage, and he makes these misleading statements. What do you make of him, the man, and then him, the politician?
Well, I find it a character flaw for a person to tell a tale and know it's a tale and don't care that they're telling it. You know, it's just like, you know, to truth be damned, so to speak, is how he was showing, and it showed his arrogance. It showed his entitlement. It showed his, you know, I'm above the law. I don't have to tell the truth because I am Congressman Paul Ryan, you know. And so because of that sense of privilege that comes with being a white male, he has just decided to get on that horse and just ride it all the way out. And so for me, it's a character issue that he is blatantly being dishonest on things that are easily able to be checked out, and on things that are not even worth lying about. And that's just, I mean, let's call it what it is. He's lying. I mean, he's lied about so many things. It's almost like, how is he even still standing straight up? Because his nose ought to be down to the floor by now.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you say that, the fact that he's lied about so many things, because there's another issue about that he lied about, and it was something that was, in my estimation, was something that one didn't have to lie about. I mean, it is admirable for someone to even run a marathon, let alone run it within, you know, a 3 or 4 hour period. But he intentionally lied about his time. So it kind of speaks to what you were saying about a character issue when someone continued to show a pattern, right? And it's one thing to do it, and then, but, you know, ever since he's come on to the national stage, you know, with this vice presidential nominee, we've seen this pattern of lie after lie after lie. I mean, it started with the Medicare, Medicaid budget plan. It's now is moving on to what he's talking about on the stage. And for CBS News, it's, you know, to fact check six things and to potentially have them be, you know, false. And then let alone something as simple as this. Now, I don't know if my listening audience have heard this, but I want you to listen to what the Associated Press mentioned. They said that Republican Paul Ryan now says he didn't run a marathon in less than 3 hours, as he claimed in a nationally broadcast interview. The vice presidential hopeful acknowledged Saturday he had misstated his marathon time by more than an hour. He released a statement correcting the record after Runner's World magazine found evidence he had completed one marathon in 1990 and finished it in just over 4 hours. Ryan told radio host Huge Hewitt last month he had run a 2 hour and 50 something marathon. That's a pace of less than 7 minutes per mile for 26.2 mile course. Extremely fast for recreational runners. Ryan said he should have rounded his marathon time to 4 hours and not three. Let alone, and now, you know, my mom used to tell me a long time ago, you have to tell 1,000 lies to make up for that one lie. And that's why, you know, lying to me is probably, it bothers me more than anything else one person can do. And when I see a situation like this, it makes me wonder, if you can't get into office on the truth, then you have to mislead me with something that is not true. So misleading someone, you know, when the truth is not in your favor, tells you a lot about that person. What do you think about that?
Well, not only do you have to mislead, but you have to cheat. And so if you look at, you know, the overall, and we'll get to that later in terms of some of their cheating tactics, but, yeah, you have to lie. You have to be deceptive in what you're saying. And you know, so they'll play on words and, you know, and say, well, he didn't say that it was the president's fault that the plant closed. I'm like, yes, he did. That's exactly what he said. Did he use those words? Oh, no, he didn't use those words. But everything he said up until that, and that the plant is closed and the president said he was going to keep it open, tells one that he's blaming the president for the plant closing. And so just when you're talking about the race, as you were stating, that wasn't even anything to lie about. That wasn't anything to – who even brought it up? What was the point?
Right.
You know, what was the context? Why was that even a story?
And so
if you lie
about
something
–
Right, and so if you lie about something so simple that has nothing to do with your policies or nothing to do with where you stand on an issue, if you lie about something so simple, then you'll lie about anything, and that's kind of where they are right now. They're just lying about anything.
I mean, as I said earlier, it's really admirable for someone to even run a marathon, participate in a marathon. I mean, the preparation that goes into it, I mean, the dedication, and then you kind of put all of that work into a fog as soon as you start lying about it, right? I mean, you're trying to make yourself seem something that you're not. You're trying to put yourself in a place that you can't be. So, you know, again, all of these things make me question the man, and more importantly, make me question who the politician will become if he's in the White House.
I want to talk a little bit
about the Republican National Convention and the optics of it all, right? I mean, you had when I look at the president's audience, when I look out there and I see all the people that's aggregated in the audience, I see all ethnic groups and I see all different, you know, a lot of diversity in the audience. But when I look at the RNC, when I see President Obama's you know, audience, you know, he has all, you know, all his diversity. But when I look at the RNC's audience, it's kind of monolithic. You know, you look out in the audience, it's all one race, an age, and demographic of people. So, what's happening here with the RNC vis-a-vis the DNC when it comes to the people that are following these political organizations?
Well, I think looking out into the audience at the RNC, you saw the 1% people probably. You saw people who have such a dislike of the president, not based on a lot of things around policy, because we know that a lot of his policies are beneficial to us all. So it's kind of, it can't just be on policy. There has to be something else driving the people that you saw. And then some of the behaviors of the people I find to be disheartening as well, that we still want to treat people in such a manner as if they're less than. And so when they talk about wanting to take their country back, I always say, who are you taking it back from? Because it was never yours in the beginning. You're taking back something that don't belong to you on the short end of that. And so, you know, I find that that's always interesting to me when they want to take their country back or they want to go back. And I'm always questioning where you want to go back to. And so that's who you see represented, that group of people who feel as though, excuse me, they have been wronged or they have been left behind by what's soon to be the majority, because they've been the majority.
So when I look at the overall demographics and I look at the overall optics of it all, and I notice that 90% of America looks like President Obama's audience. And so I wonder why that this is not a landslide election, right? When I look at, you know, I saw Melissa Harris Perry's show over the weekend, and she talked about if you go to the Democrat National Convention's webpage and they have a pull down, and you pull down, it shows you all of the different constituent groups. You know, you got African Americans, you got Latino, you have GLBT, you have, you know, women, you have the seniors, you have all of these disparate groups. And he's put in an enacted legislation that represents or having an impact on all these groups. But yet, when it comes to the polls, and I see this 48, 49, when I see this 50, 30, 40, I mean 50, 50 type of polling out there, it doesn't register to me. How can this be true that President Obama has 90% representation, but when it comes to the poll, it's a 50-50 split? I don't understand.
Well, I'm going to tell you how, and I know we're probably going to get to this later, but, you know, I'm going to give them and say maybe they are polling, you know, registered voters, and we know registration is down in the African-American community and other communities. So because of that, that's who they're polling. They're not polling regular, you know, Joe and Jane Smith, who is going to be able to give them the real deal. Now, the poll they did get right is probably the one that shows Romney having 0.00% of the African-American vote. That's probably the only poll that's been right. All these other ones, I don't even think that's right. I'm being facetious, but I'm not sure who they're polling. I mean, although I did get a call recently about some things going on here in the state of Texas, and I thought it was quite interesting how they were phrasing their questions. And to a non-political politics follower, you know, I would have been confused or trapped up a little bit. But because I follow what's happening, he wasn't able to get me. So
interesting.
And I'm wondering if that's how they do all of them.
So you believe that? Is your judgment that the polling questions that they're asking could confuse most people, and that's why the numbers are skewed in the way that they are?
And yes, I will say that, and I will say that based on my own experience and the couple of times that I've answered the phone and I've taken some polls, how they phrase their questions, you have to be, and then they ask you the same questions three times. It's almost like you're taking one of those psychological exams to see how you respond, because then they ask you the same question three times but three different ways, trying to see if your answer is going to be the same, I guess. But yes, I'll say that based on the polls that I've participated in, sometimes if you're not fully paying attention and listen to the whole question, you could respond a different way than what you normally would.
So when I look at, we only have a few more months remaining before November, and we've already, you know, we're in full steam ahead now. How many more lies will you? This is a two-part question. How many more lies do you think we will get from the Republican Party, part A? And then part B of the question is, how many more lies will you think the media and us as the American people would allow for them to continue to move forward?
Well, I think the Republican National Convention put it on full display for everybody to see for themselves the amount of lies that was coming out. I think people was hearing about different things in bits and pieces, and it may have been secondhand or third hand how they were receiving it. But in watching the convention this week, you got to hear it firsthand from the mouthpieces of the party. And so hearing it from somebody up front is different than hearing it, you know, by way of somebody else. So I think having that happened, people are like, well, wait a minute, that's not what I remember, or that's not how it was explained to me. So people may now begin to start to question some of the things they just took as factual based on what they was getting from Fox News or CNN or whoever they was getting their information from or whatever blog they was reading for the day. Whereas now they've heard up close and then they heard commentary immediately. So let's say you were watching Fox News, and you heard commentary immediately, but then you switched over to a CNN or you know, to MSNBC, and you heard commentary immediately. You were getting some different feelings about what was just being said. And so I hope, if it does anything, I hope that it forces each person that is able and registered to vote to go out and do their own research and find out the answers for themselves, and not just totally rely on media, because at this juncture, I'm not sure we can trust media to give it to us straight. I'm hopeful that as we go into the DNC, that, you know, we have the same, you know, vigilance in terms of making sure that what the speakers are saying is truthful, and when it's not, that they're called out on it. And I have to say, you know, I'm partial to MSNBC because I like when people tell the truth. Every now and then, I'll turn to CNN, depending on who's on there, and I can, you know, get some truth, facts, information. But I got a lot of my feedback off of Twitter. Twitter kept me more informed on what was happening and where the untruths were lying than anybody I saw on TV.
Right. Yeah. So. That's a good point. I mean, well stated. It's time for a quick break, but when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about Clint Eastwood's empty chair. You know, it sparked a lot of controversy over the last couple of days, so we're going to talk about that. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
What do I have to do to prove it's true? Tell you the time, the place, and everything? Then tell the truth, sucker. For the truth shall make you free. That's just.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk and 2 to listen. You can also follow us on Facebook. Go out to Current Events with Patrick Cook and like us on Facebook. Now, Jim, before the break, I talked a little bit about, we were talking about the Republicans' National Convention, and we were talking about the lies that took place or the misleading comments by some of the speakers throughout the convention. And now I want to shift to another thing that happened during the convention, and that was primarily Clint Eastwood's empty chair. I want to call it a debacle. And I say that because in my honest opinion, it worked at the time. I mean, people were laughing. If you seen that type of monologue take place before, you understood what was going on. So I guess my question is to you, what did you think about the overall imagery around this? And specifically, what kind of metaphor do you think he was trying to display?
Well, let me say this first about the laughter you got from the audience. This is the same group of people in terms of being Republicans that booed the gay soldier who was fighting over in Iraq. This is the same group of people that laughed when Ron Paul made the statement or alluded to letting the person die because they didn't have medical insurance. This is the same group of people that clapped when Rick Perry made this comment of in terms of how many people he had executed. So the fact that they laughed during the skit or the performance by Clint Eastwood is not that impressive to me. I wasn't so much offended by it as much as I was like, oh, my gosh, this is bad in terms of horrible, not bad as in good, but bad as in embarrassed for him. I wasn't embarrassed for the president because you can say a lot of things, but the president is far from being an empty chair or empty suit. You may want him to be, but that's not what he is, and his actions have shown that to be the case. Not his words, but the decisions that he's made in his first term of his presidency has shown him to be more than an empty chair. So that part I wasn't offended by. I was more like, this is how I felt sorry for Mitt Romney, believe it or not. I felt sorry for him that on the night that's supposed to be his biggest night of introducing himself to America and all that that means and all that had happened through the course of the week, that he has to come behind this and sell his story. I mean, it was an impossible, mountain to climb. And so I was like, poor Mitt, he just can't catch a break. Because, you know, that couldn't have been scripted. It couldn't have been. So that's what I felt. I mean, I wasn't surprised by anything the people did because of who the people are and what they've done throughout this whole campaign season. Nothing that they do was surprising. But I was, I had a little bit of poor Mitt. That's about all I can say with poor Mitt.
Wow. So I want to shift the conversation now to voters, or voter ID in particular. Now, in the space of a few weeks, we had two different courts come to two different conclusions in evaluating the legality of the voter ID laws. In Pennsylvania, state trial judge upheld the law. And in Washington, a federal panel rejected Texas' similar ID law. What is going on here with these voter ID laws? And I ask that in the context of states' rights. One state says yes, one state says no. What are we doing here?
Well, you have their goal, and I believe all of these states in which you're referencing all have Republican governors and Republican Congress going on in each state. And so we know that the whole reason why there was changes made to the Constitution in terms of amendments and in terms of things that were added was the federal government decided that separate was not equal on a federal level. And because of that, states could no longer discriminate against children of color and keep them from having access to the same sorts of things that was granted to children not of color, as was with voting rights, as was with women's, right to vote. So all of those things happened on a federal level. If it had been left up to the states, you probably wouldn't still be able to vote or go to school where we wanted to or live where we wanted to or eat where we wanted to. If it was left up to each state. And I think that's, so when they want to go back to that, no, I don't want to go there. I don't want the state to be able to make that decision because it wouldn't be fair. It's never been fair. It would be different if there had not been a need. It's almost like when you talk about the voting rights and the suppression, and it was a solution looking for a problem. Because there wasn't a problem. They just made up some stuff, right? So it would be different if during the time when the states did have power and control that things were done fairly and equitably, but they were not. So because they were not, that's the reason why the federal government had to step in. The federal government didn't step in because it didn't have anything else to do. It stepped in because there were so many violations and violations of people's genuine human rights. Just being human.
I mean, I said this a couple of weeks ago about the Supreme Court. You know, and I gave them a little credit to say that, you know, they are being the parents of the Republican Party. They are being the fathers and grandfathers is what I said. And I was saying it in the context of, you know, over the past decade, you have a lot of the GOP shifting into, you know, way to the extreme right. And it's not in the best interest of the United States as a whole. And so the judges have been in place to say, okay, you know, you've played long enough, and I'm going to say now I'm going to bring you back to the center. I'm going to put you in a place, a better position, that's going to have a more positive impact on the United States, as opposed to you just, you know, going way off to the right, I should say, and with this nonsense. And so here we have a similar issue with voters' ID. I believe that eventually it's going to get to the Supreme Court, just like the health care law did. Just like most situations that are the laws are passed at the federal level have to get this type of visibility before we can really enact change. The problem I have, though, with this particular issue is that we've already did this through other amendments with respect to the right to vote. Why are we revisiting this? That's the question.
Well, we're revisiting it because the great, and I say that being facetious, Karl Rove made the decision back in 2008 that we must eliminate 20,000 voters in North Carolina. We must eliminate so many thousands of voters in Florida. And the best way to do that is to make it harder for them to vote, bottom line, because the president won North Carolina, I believe, by a mere 13,000 votes, but he won it. But if you take away what he won by and add some more to it, then chances are he's not going to win there again. If you make it more difficult for people to vote, and you come up with these lies, I mean, it's just lies, like if you owe back child support or you owe your cable bill, you can't vote.
Right, right.
And the sad part about it is the amount of people that believe it. That's even worse. That's even worse. It's horrible that you are reducing yourself to such tactics. But it's even more sad that people believe it, that there is a person out there and there are people out there that believe that because I owe back child support and because I owe on my Comcast cable bill that I am not going to be allowed to vote. That's what's even more sad to me. How do you and what is that about? How do you even address that? So, you know, that's why they did it, because they wanted to ensure that this was a one-term president. They said it. This is a, and it would be one thing if this was all made-up information, but there's proof of the meeting. Nobody backs away when you ask them about the meeting that happened on inauguration night as to what they were going to do. And the sad part about it is because that healthcare fight was so dirty, and because, you know, the president was fighting some in his own party, these blue dog Democrats that ain't nothing but Republicans in disguise, because he fought them for so long to get that health care law passed, that is the reason why things happened like they did in 2010. They didn't happen like that just because. But had that not happened, then we wouldn't be seeing them for who they really are, because everybody's sheet has come off now. Nobody's hiding underneath the hood or the sheet. They're real clear about what they're doing. And they are being unapologetic about it, that we are going to restrict your right to vote. We're going to restrict your right to choose. We're going to restrict your right to free education. We're going to restrict your right to have health care. I mean, they have made no qualms about what it is they're doing.
Yeah, because in a lot of instances it was kind of too late now to do anything about it, right? Because they, you know, slowly behind the scenes they were maneuvering and positioning and getting themselves ready for this particular date, right? I mean, by enacting legislation, by getting the people in the office, because they knew they couldn't do anything at the federal level. And we said this, you know, years ago, is that since they couldn't do it at the federal level, they were now starting to do it at the state level. You know, we always say on here, all politics is local. And so they got those, you know, House of Representatives in there. They got those state senators in there. And so now they've been going out enacting this legislation that has a profound impact on the majority of people in their states. And you know, there's this term out there called LIVs, low information voters. And this is a term that keeps popping up everywhere. But the term simply means this. It is someone who votes against their interests and the best interests of the nation. It assumes that they vote their way because of the lack of sufficient information about the issues. They hear sound bites and they go out and they listen to Fox News and they vote against their own interests about all of the things you just mentioned. Those LIVs are the person that's really destroying America because they're not informed voters. And they're putting people in there in office that are making decisions for them that's really destroying them. Interesting concept, but it's the truth.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would also say the other part of the argument of coin or whatever is that you go back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the media. The media didn't do its job around healthcare either. They let a bunch of untruths go unchecked during that time period and bought into a lot of what the right wing was saying. They gave the Tea Party way too much exposure. They gave the hate way too much exposure. And that's all it was. It was hate. They gave the hate way too much airtime. And it began, you know, to fester in people. And so when 2010 came around, people's rage and anger toward this man of color, this black man being in the White House, just overpowered their sense of sensibility, overpowered their common sense. So they voted for people that they had absolutely nothing in common with. And those people that were running for election ran on the fact that, you know, we could do a whole lot better in getting our economy turned around if we just controlled one of the houses. So they got the House of Representatives back. And yet, in the time they've been there, in the 2 years they've been there, that House of Representatives has yet to come up with one jobs bill. Not one jobs bill in the 2 years almost they've been up there in Washington have they decided to bring forth that they've voted on. Not one. But they've voted on hundreds of abortion bills. They've voted on hundreds of contraception bills. They've voted on hundreds of just unnecessary stuff. But they have yet to propose legislation surrounding jobs, which was all what they were supposed to be doing. And so I'm hopeful that maybe now that the bell is ringing and that people are beginning to listen, that they'll begin to see, well, wait a minute, well, why haven't you put in a jobs bill? And you're running for reelection again, Representative Paul Ryan, which is odd that you're still running for reelection and running for vice president. I haven't quite figured out how that works, but maybe Paul Ryan can tell us one day.
Well, I mean, it could potentially be in a position where he lose both,
and
right?
And that's what I'm hopeful for, that the people of the great state of Ohio will stand up and say, we don't want you here anymore, we're done with you. Is he in Ohio or Wisconsin? One of them two. Wherever he is, I hope they tell him bye-bye.
Right. So let's shift now to the Democratic National Convention that's going to be taking place next week. So they got a lot of heavy hitters, specifically New York Mayor Cory Booker is going to be speaking. And also, Newark, New Jersey, correct?
Newark, New Jersey. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mayor Cory Booker is going to be speaking. Also, former President Jimmy Carter. But he's going to be coming via video. So what do you think? And then, of course, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the man himself, President Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is going to Bill Clinton is going to talk about next week?
Bill Clinton is going to lay out a roadmap as to what has what this president has already accomplished, how the policies of this president matches what he done when he was in office. He's going to make a parallel. He's going to make it real clear to the American voter that if you go back in time and you remember how things were under my presidency, we can get back there with this man. So people are going to begin to see that, you know, if we keep on this path, then we will go back to what we felt like 8 years ago or 12 years ago and not 4 years ago. because 4 years ago we were in total despair, but not even realizing that we were that far off, you know? It's like you have a headache, but you don't realize that the headache is about to be a brain aneurysm. And that's about where we were. We were on the brink of destruction four years ago, but we just thought we had a little cold, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so Clinton is going to be able to bring it all to that white male voter who the president, you know, he'll never get that vote, but that's fine. He'll get some of it, the older white male voter. That's who Clinton is going to be talking to. He's going to be talking to some rich people. Some of that 1%, that's who Clinton is going to be talking to, and you let Clinton talk to them. That's who you let him talk to.
And believe you me, he will talk.
And I hope they have the Sandman to bring him on off when it's time. But that's who Clinton will talk to. I think the First Lady will make her speech to the women, to mothers, to our military. That impassioned part of who she is. Joe Biden would make the same appeal to the same people that that President Clinton speaks to. But it'll have a different feel on it because of Joe's scrappiness and you know, sometimes Clinton can be real heady and Joe can just be, you know, down on the street sometimes. So that's what we'll get out of that.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up about President Obama's accomplishment, because I always hear often people say, you know, they ask the question, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And on every measure that I look at, the answer is yes. When you look at the mortgage crisis that was averted, when you look at the lowest interest rates in my lifetime, when you look at the fact that we have health care now, when you look at the Lilly Ledbetter Act, when you look at the war in Iraq, when you look at the number of pure jobs in the private sector that was gained, when you look at the stock market, the fact that it's twice as it was in 2008, every measure, we are better off than we were 4 years ago. So I don't get it. Why is it that people don't get it, Jima?
Because they're not looking for it. And so what the president has to stand up there and say is, in spite of the obstacles that were in my way, with this Republican Congress, and in spite of the bad hand I was dealt when I took office, here's what I've done. And he has to lay it out in layman's terms. He has to be able to tell me how, and he has to be able to tell me as a college student how his plan is helping me right now or will help me next fall when I go back to school. He has to tell that recent college graduate the fact that, you know, you may not get that job right out the gate where you can afford insurance, but don't worry about it because you can stay on your parents' insurance for right now. You know, he has to be able to sell it and sell it to me in such layman's terms that I get it, that I totally understand and speak powerfully about the things that he has accomplished. Leave it to the people that comes before him to talk about the mess we was in. He has to lay out the future. He has to move forward. And I was having this conversation with my mother, and because we were talking about, you know, why Mitt Romney felt compelled to have all these other people speak on his behalf, where I've always said, can't nobody tell my story better than me.
Right.
So, you know, and the song says, you can't tell it, let me tell it, you know, what the Lord has done for me. So let me tell it. So when it gets down to what he's done, the president has to tell his story. And he has to tell it in such a manner that it resonates with people all across socioeconomic lines, racial lines, you know, every area. And he has to tell it in such a manner that we say, you know what, I can believe that you're going to take me to another level, and I'm ready to go there. That's what he has to do.
What will be the biggest obstacle that the president will have between now and Election Day?
It will be poor voter turnout. It will be the voter suppression working. It would be people not even trying to go and register because they don't think it's going to matter. It would be the believing the lies of if you owe back child support or if you, you know, finding out what is really real in your state as it relates to somebody that may be a felon. All states are different in that manner. Once a felon, that doesn't preclude you from voting for the rest of your life, depending on what type of it is, depending on what type of a crime was committed. So people have got to go do some research and not just take, oh, you can't vote because you're a felon. My mom it was down at the food shelter in Kansas City, Kansas, and was trying to register people to vote, and 8 of the 10 African-American males that she was, you know, wanting to register to vote all said they had felons and they couldn't. Well, how do you know that? Who told you that? You know, are you sure? And
right.
So making sure that people, you know, and so that's going to be the biggest obstacle is whether or not people will actually get out and vote or if people will be apathetic and not believe that, you know, these people mean them no good. That's going to be it. Because he's done all he can do at this point.
Yeah, I think Justice Jackson said that there was going to be voter suppression, but there was also going to be voters' frustration, which is the point you're talking to.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so last question, because we're closing up here. We're getting down to the end of the show. So what do you think that will be the biggest surprise for both sides between now and Election Day?
Well, it'll be a surprise if Mitt Romney releases tax returns. That would definitely be a surprise.
You know, but we primarily stopped talking about it.
No, we haven't. There's still some buzz out there. But you gotta take a look at this week, though. I mean, this week was so bad for Mitt Romney and for the Republican campaign that you really couldn't even talk about the taxes because you were too busy talking about all the other nonsense that happened during the convention. And that's not what's supposed to happen in your convention. You're supposed to come out of your convention on a high, and I can't say that that's what happened to Mitt Romney. So I would be surprised if we got his tax returns. I know there is some investigation going on into some of the earnings and whatnot of Bain Capital. And so that someone is turning it over to the Department of Justice, I believe, or somebody is investigating it. So the question now becomes when it's not if that shoe is going to fall, it's when that shoe is going to fall. Are they going to hold it until after the election and after Mitt Romney loses and then we get all the background info on Bain Capital, or is somebody going to drop it before? That's the question, because something is brewing about this Bain Capital stuff. From the president's side, I mean, about the only thing, he's ran such a tight, disciplined campaign before. He's run a disciplined presidency. You very seldom get people going off, you know, off the plan except for Joe every now and then. But so it would just be something totally unexpected that you would not expect to come out of the Obama campaign because they've never done nothing like that before. So I don't know what that could possibly be because they have now taken the line from the Republican playbook in terms of their key talking points. You know, they have certain buzzwords they say all the time, you know, the assault on women, the assault on education. I mean, the words that they're using, you hear now out of all of the so-called surrogates that are on television, they're all speaking the same language. Which we couldn't say that a year ago. We couldn't say that 2 years ago. And so finally they're understanding, just keep saying the same thing because what you're saying is true. It's not that it's not true. And the truth would definitely, as you stated in our opening, will set somebody free. And
right.
Hopefully it will be the people who continue to vote against their own interests that will wake up one day and say, wait a minute. Everything they talk about cutting, I receive. I receive Medicaid. My grandma get Medicaid. I mean, you know, all of these things. I get Social Security. My child get free reduced lunch at school. So all these programs that they talk about cutting, I'm a direct beneficiary of. Well, I want to vote for that person. Maybe that, you know, they would be, that would begin to resonate with people.
Wonderful. What are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts, as usual, is to please check your status. Make sure that they haven't purged you off of the list. And the best way to know if you've been purged, people, is to continue to vote in all of your local elections, whether it's for the city council, the mayor, judges, whatever. That's how you know whether or not your name has been removed, because those lists have to be up to date. I vote for everything. And I try to be as informed as I can when I go into that voting booth. So just make sure that you have everything you need. And the deadline is quickly approaching. We're about a little bit over a month for when you have to be registered to vote, which I believe is October 8th, to be registered to vote, to be able to vote in the upcoming election. So you do not want to wait until the last minute to gather all your paperwork and gather everything that you need to make sure that you are exercising that right to vote. If you know, if your church has not gotten involved, please press on your pastor, priest, or whomever to make sure that everybody in the church is registered. If you can just touch the people that you know right up front, touch those in your community, and touch those in your families, you'll be surprised at how many people that you think are registered that are not, because they're just not paying attention. And so it's school time. I'm hoping that as the first PTA meeting start at your child's school, that you are in attendance at that first meeting of the teacher, that you go and meet your teacher, or that you at least have an initial conversation. The way we start out sometimes is how we end, and we need to make sure that our kids know that we are there for them, and let the parents and the teachers know and those in administration at your child's school know that you are there for them. As I state all the time, they know me at my son's school. When I walk in the door, they know me because I'm there all the time. And I make a point to speak to people so that they'll know, yeah, I see you and you see me. And I'm going to make sure that my child is taken care of every day. So that's the message that we have to put forth, that we do care about our children's education, that we do care about their future, and we want them to get the best they can for as long as they can so that they can grow up to be the best that God has purposed in their life for them to be.
Outstanding. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cook. Now don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at Ask Jima. That's AskJEMA. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofit. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade, Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. I also want to mention, next weekend, next Sunday, that's right, it'll be our second year anniversary. Tune in to Current Events with Patrick Cook for our special broadcast. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce.